tick-tock, you don't stop. To the tick-tock, you don't stop. I know you're not gonna sing that song.
Well, this is Josh and Jen and Ed. Hello, Jen.
Hello, Josh.
And Ed. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening.
And we are joined tonight by Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen, did I pronounce that right?
You absolutely did. Great job in that. You know, this is an interesting story. You actually pronounce the name the way I do. Should I tell this story now, or shall we wait till later?
Well, here, let's just give you a brief introduction. Stephen, you played Sandy Ryerson on the show Glee, which is the subject of our podcast. And you've appeared in, gosh, just about everything ever produced at some point or another. So congratulations.
Everything except Sister Act 2, I think.
You've done, gosh, I guess on your podcast, they say around 150 movies and television shows.
Well, I think it's about 115 movies and about 200 television shows.
Wow.
It hurts.
That's something. And we've discussed Heroes on the show before, because I guess a handful of the Glee cast members also appeared in Heroes. And so that's kind of a unique situation. But yeah, so tell us about how you pronounce your name, Stephen.
Well, I think you did a great job, because you pronounce my name the way I do, Stephen Tobolowsky, you said. But my brother doesn't pronounce it the same way. He says Tobolowsky. And there are other people in my family that pronounce it Tobolowsky. And I didn't know what it was. So when I went back to Dallas about 4 years ago, I asked my uncle Nathan how to pronounce my name. Is it Tobolowsky? And he said, well, you can pronounce it any way you want, because it's not really your name.
Oh.
And I went, what? What is this? And he said that when grandfather came to America, and he came into the country through Galveston, grandfather didn't speak English at all. And of course, the fellow from the government didn't speak whatever grandfather spoke, which is probably Polish, Russian, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he asked them, who are you? And in German and Polish, who, wo, is where, not who. So my grandfather thought he said, where are you from? And so he said, Tobolowsk, because that's a town in Russia. So he said, Abram Tobolowsky, which is, I am a son of Tobolowsk. So I got my name the same way Don Corleone got his name in The Godfather.
Wow.
And awesome. I don't really know what my last name is.
That's why. You know, it's funny, because Jennifer and I have, since we got married, we've joked about how my name, my last name is Burnell, and it's also made up by a man who was fleeing the law. And Jennifer's mother's name.
Great grandmother's name
was made up because she was fleeing the law.
It was my great-great-grandfather was in the Canadian Mounted Police, and he fell in love with a much younger woman, which was not exactly looked upon kindly at the time. So they fled the border from Canada into the Northeast United States, and they changed their last name. So, yes, we all are somebody new in the United States.
That's wild.
When we're talking about a younger woman, are we talking about Jerry Lee Lewis territory? Or
I think she was 16, but that could have just been edited for my ears. So,
well, in dog years, that's certainly old enough.
Yes.
Right. Well, let's dive right into Glee. Stephen, that's the subject of our show. And your character, Sandy, is a personal favorite of everyone on the show.
Hooray!
Sandy was, in a way, the catalyst for everything that has happened on Glee thus far, because he was the original captain?
Artistic director.
Artistic director. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So tell us, how did you get involved with the show?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do this podcast with David Chen, And I'm doing a whole story about how I got involved with the show, but I'll give you a kind of a teaser to that podcast.
Absolutely.
In that, you know, like most actors, I got a script and I read it. And the thing was about Glee, and I think this is really kind of an interesting thing that I'm still kind of pondering. I read that script and I fell in love with it. And as I look back in time, I fell in love with it because of the way it made me feel. It made me feel so good about people and about life. And it made me feel the way you feel when you watch that show. Mm-hmm. But as I look at the individual elements that make up Glee, I think like, but we've seen all these elements before. Well, you know, we've seen the high school setting and we've seen the honest teacher and the football player with the heart of gold and the mean teacher and the mean cheerleader. We've seen all of those things before. What is it about this script that is so different and this show that is so different? And for the life of me, it's some sort of, the best answer I have for it is it's some sort of magic. I think wow. It's some sort of kind of thing that's floating in the air that elevates. You know what it is? I'm just thinking about it right now. This show is, most television shows are about empowerment, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, either you're empowered because like on Heroes, you can fly or heal yourself or turn things into gold, or you're empowered on some shows because you're a cop and you got a gun. On this show, the element of empowerment is not that you could sing like Leah and Matt can, mm-hmm. but it's that you have a voice. And what this show said in the script, which is different from all those other cliche scripts, whatever it is that Glee says that your voice is good enough, that your voice has something to say. And of course, it is amplified 100 times when you have the singers that they have on the show who metaphorically carry your voice forward. When you have those people singing and you identify with those people, but you know, people like Sandy on the show, Sandy is still an elevating character on the show, even though, you know, I don't sing or dance on that show, except in, you know, I want to sex you up. But it's please, yeah, tell me about it.
That was great.
But still, Sandy is an elevating character.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my theory on it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Tell us about I Want to Sex You Up. Is that your main, is that your first experience singing and dancing for the camera?
No. No. Oh, gosh, no. The other time I danced was I did a tango with Jane Seymour in the movie Blind Dating.
Okay.
And we worked at that same studio with the same choreographer that does Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And then I did another tango, curiously, in a TV show called Home Court. I think, you know, tangos are more my speed. When I was a younger man, I used to do musicals in the theater in Dallas. And there I used to dance. And I wasn't better, but I was in better shape.
So. Well, Jennifer had a question about Sandy's name.
Yes. Well, two of my favorite characters that you've portrayed share the same last name, Ryerson. And I was wondering if that was more than just a coincidence.
Boy, I wish I had a better answer for that question than I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
Because I got the script and I said the same thing. I said, my goodness, how often do you see Ryerson? Maybe this is a sign of good things to come.
I guess, because I've never heard the name before. And years ago, I was running a video store back east, and we had to kind of keep family-friendly movies on in the background. And I'm telling you, Groundhog Day was just the one film that we would just play for days at a time. So I was a big fan. And
it's a great, great film.
It is.
And like when I went in on the audition, I thought, I wonder if it's going to help me or hurt me that I've already played a Ryerson before. And Maybe yeah. Ryan Murphy had thought of this as some huge joke, that this is Ned Ryerson in a different incarnation. I have no idea.
Interesting. Well, if we last year we went to Comic-Con and we were fortunate enough to finally make it into the Glee panel. And if we get into it again this time, I will stand in line and I'm going to make somebody explain the name Ryerson.
Please, and let me know.
I will.
That's awesome. Well, so you just got back from Punxsutawney for the Groundhog Day celebration.
They wanted me to be an honorary member of the Inner Circle.
Aww.
And that was, they gave me a top hat, and they flew me out there, and then at 5 in the morning, which is really 4:32 in the morning, right. Woke up at 1 in the morning, they drove me out to this mountaintop where they do the groundhog. And from 5 to 7:30, I was shivering my little buns off, and then they pulled the groundhog out, and the groundhog said that it was going to be 6 more weeks of winter.
Yep.
But that was very, very exciting. I had no idea how insane that event was. I mean, there were thousands of people there. Everybody was just so happy to be there in this freezing weather.
Oh, yeah.
And so excited to hear what Punxsutawney Phil had to say.
Yeah. We actually have a friend who was there, and I haven't seen her pictures yet, but I'm anxiously awaiting them.
Yeah.
Now, you were with Glee from, like, I mean, obviously you were in the pilot. Like, you were there from the very beginning.
Yes.
Was there just a vibe that something different was happening? Or, because it is such a unique show, and they do seem to be doing things that haven't been done on television, at least for a while. Was there a vibe on the set that things were different?
It's a complicated question. The answer is yes and no. And the no part of the question is, I don't think there was a vibe on the set of what I think you're aiming at is, my goodness, where this is going to be an enormous hit. This is going to be a phenomenon. Do we realize what we're doing here?
Hmm. Okay.
But the vibe that was different on the show, which I think is why it is such a huge hit, is everybody worked and is working so hard on the show. It is not, I've worked on lots of television shows where everybody feels like they're the cheerleader in high school. You know, they just kind of lollygag around and they're just thrilled to be there making all that money. And the people on the Glee set work hard, and they work hard like you do on a Broadway play.
Hmm.
Where it's a schedule that would make most people's hair curl. We're talking about, you have music rehearsals, you have dance rehearsals. You have to run over to recording studios to record. You have to come back and do scene rehearsals. You have to shoot scenes from various episodes. You're going from early in the morning to very late at night, and everybody is dedicated to the task of doing the show. And when I've been on other shows, is this a long-winded answer?
No, this is great.
When I've been on other shows, there's always this kind of frivolous quality to the work. Not always, but sometimes everybody kind of is tongue-in-cheek about the work we're doing. Maybe it's because the nature of the work is so hard. Maybe it's because there's so many theater people in the show. Mm-hmm. The people in Glee take the work very seriously. And so on the set, you don't have this feeling of, oh my God, we're on this huge hit. But we have the feeling of, oh my God, we have so much work to do today. Are we going to get it done?
Okay.
Let's get it done. And it's dedication,
which
is a great, great feeling on the set.
Yeah, it must be really invigorating just to be in that level of people working at the top of their game.
Yes, yeah, you got it. That's it. It's people working at the top of the game, and everybody working together to try to pull off this enormous enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand, when I was doing Heroes, that was a huge show, and we took over an entire entire studio.
Mm-hmm.
We were in something like 7 different of those stages.
Wow.
And we were going, doing episodes from various shows and special effects from various shows. However you want to say, Glee is growing to that kind of proportion. And the difference is everybody is, you see people standing outside on the street at Paramount in the little side street working on dance steps.
Wow.
You see people like, look, what if I did this? What if I did this? What if I did this? Hey, look at me. Tell me, how does this look? Do you like this better or this better? Everybody is trying to pitch, you know, their best ideas and working with Zach Woodley, who's our choreographer. It's a great environment to be a part of.
Wow. Ed, did you have a question about your favorite character on the show?
I love Jane Lynch's character, Sue. How was it? How do you feel about the character as a person? And how do you think Sandy feels about the character? I don't know. I'm wondering if they're somewhat different.
About how Sandy feels towards Sue?
Yes.
It's interesting because I feel like the writing in that area is still not determined. I feel like there was a part in which, in some of the scripts, where it was developing that Sandy and Sue were antagonists, and then it was developing that Sandy and Sue were protagonists, mm-hmm. That they were working together instead of attacking one another. But now, I'm not too sure in the future where that's going to go. So I think that element is still up in the air. I think Sue and Sandy are very much alike in that they're both people who live in their own bubbles of me. They don't have a lot of perception of what really is going on in the world around them. Sue very much has her aims, and her power structure is worked through the school. Sandy is on a different level. Mm-hmm. He is not getting his power structure through the school. Even before, when he was the choir director, Sandy is working on trying to rejoin the world of the normal somehow. And I think, you know, the interesting thing that Sandy brings to the table is that Sandy is one of the few comic adult characters that can work either in the school or outside of the school.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really very interesting, yeah. Because everybody else has to work within the confines of the school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sandy either sells drugs and moves out there as talk of another, and I don't want to say it or give anything away, but there's talk of another plot line of Sandy working outside of the school in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
But if part of your question, Ed, too, is working with Jane,
mm-hmm. Yes,
is that
please.
Part of the question?
Yes, definitely.
That goes to what I was saying before. I feel like it's old homeschool day talking with a theater person. Jane and I sit around and we tell theater stories when we're waiting. And we laugh ourselves sick.
Wow.
You know, she tells me about various shows and disasters she was in. And we laugh till we pee in our pants. And then I tell stories about horrible shows I was in. And it's, again, the kind of thing that happens when you're working on a play. And there is no camaraderie, I found, as strong as actors working on a play. And there's no camaraderie that's almost as elusive as trying to get a speck out of a water glass as camaraderie on a film set.
Mm.
That camaraderie is very strong when the movie exists and then evaporates completely. But the camaraderie you develop during a play is a camaraderie that you could carry with you your entire life.
Wow.
And that is kind of the feeling I have with Jane.
It is true. I mean, if you speak to somebody who has a great deal of theater experience, and you have a great deal of theater experience, I don't have as much professional, but I have spent years of my life in the theater, and there's a certain like, oh, you've been to war too. Like,
perfect.
You were in Korea as well.
I could have said it better. That's it exactly. You've been to war too. Exactly.
And, you know, Jane Lynch, who plays deliciously evil like no one currently, but she is not evil in person. She's nice in person.
No, she's completely evil. No, she's wonderful.
Oh, good.
Jane is wonderful. And, you know, she's so kind of open and available and, you know, telling stories about her life. You know, she was talking very much about how when she was in college, and I don't think I'm, you know, in college, she was kind of always felt like an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when she would do dramatic scenes, even like sometimes people would laugh, you know, because she has that great comic ability. If you see, you know, you take a look, you could take a look at Jane in Glee, in which she's such a dominant presence, just with her comic ability, her presence. But let's roll back the clock. Let's go back in time and take a look at a little part Jane did in that movie, The Fugitive.
Wow.
Do you remember Jane in The Fugitive?
I do not. Does anybody?
No, and I've seen that movie at least a dozen times.
So Jane played the hospital worker who knew Richard Kimball and stuck her neck out to help him.
Oh, okay.
In the, you know, I'll get you these files. I'll get you this. I'll get you that.
Oh, okay. When he was trying to uncover his wife's murder.
Absolutely. And when I didn't know Jane from Adam at that point in time, but I remember seeing that movie and I went like, mm-hmm. I don't know who that woman is, but man, is she good. And, you know, Jane can distinguish herself. You know, like somebody once said, you know, she could play anything from Romeo to Juliet. It's in everything around the spectrum. And it's partly, I don't mean this in a flattering way, but I mean it in just kind of a very realistic way. Jane is an incredibly intelligent person.
Mm-hmm.
Just as you, she's very intelligent. You add that to the fact that she's socially has always felt like she's kind of an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And so you always have this powerful intelligence observing. And you end up with comedy.
Yeah.
You end up with somebody who can capture nuances, who can turn a phrase 50 different ways, who can talk, who can listen, somebody who can improvise nonstop. And that is what Jane's intelligence brings to the part.
Yeah, she's such an asset in those Christopher Guest movies. She always just brings something just totally out of left field and absolutely believable. I mean, the absurd characters she plays in like A Mighty Wind, and yet it's totally believable.
Yes, and then you take a look at the Best in Show,
mm-hmm.
how absolutely kind of sweet and heroic she was in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you take a look at her in 40-year-old virgin.
Oh, yeah.
And there really isn't a huge difference in her appearance in those movies. The change is all done internally.
Yeah.
With and the way an actor does that is what is important to me and what is not important to me. And they create almost a different armature that creates a different sensibility that an audience responds to.
Mm-hmm.
Jane is unique. She's a great, great star. And the Glee is very lucky to have her.
They really are. She's really a highlight on the show. And so many of the actors on the show don't have a great deal of film and television experience. You know, Matthew Morrison has a couple roles and Leah has a couple roles. But it does seem to be, I mean, when you say theater, that seems so fitting because, you know, Matthew and Leah have such tremendous theatrical backgrounds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that they haven't done a lot of film or TV doesn't matter because, as you said, Josh, they've been to battle. They've been to war.
Yeah.
You don't do Spring's Awakening. You don't do South Pacific.
Seriously.
You don't do Footloose. You don't do any of those things without coming away with a ton of battle scars and a lot of experience.
Mm. So can you tell us, are we going to see more Sandy Ryerson in the future?
The short answer is yes.
Awesome.
And I think it would not be telling you too much is that Sandy is going to reappear in a song with Leah.
Oh, wow. That's so exciting.
now I'm trying to figure out how this is going to work.
We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
That makes our Gleek hearts sing.
I know. And you know, Ryan told me at the Golden Globes, he says, you know, get your dancing shoes on because, you know, we're you know, Sandy is coming back big time. And I go, really? And he goes, oh, yeah, you're coming back in a song. And I go, like, no. As if I want to sex you up wasn't enough. And then we just, Ryan, and we just talked on Friday right before this. And I guess we shoot in a couple of weeks, something like that.
Wow.
You guys start back up in April, correct?
Or the show starts.
The show.
Yeah. Okay. Show starts. We're shooting now.
Right, but so it'll be back on in April.
And Glee got a pickup for the second season, so yes. This is really kind of technically the back half of the first season.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
So, are you going to be on the tour? Can we expect to see you singing and dancing?
No, I'm sure not. You know, they don't want to see Sandy on the tour. You know, they want all those great kids and all those singers and all that, you know. That,
yes.
Yeah, I think not. But, you know, I'm, you know, you never can tell in this business. You never know.
Well, so tell us a little bit about the Stephen Tobolowsky Files, the podcast that you were doing at Slash Film.
Yeah, it's... I had done like three interviews and over a year's period of time with David Chin on slashfilm.com. And at one of the breaks, David said, I had done this movie called Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a movie that was done over like 4 days with no script, no rehearsal, just putting a camera on me and me talking.
Mm-hmm.
And some people at HBO saw it and said, can we premiere this at the HBO Comedy Festival in Aspen? And we go like, well, yeah. And anyway, that was in 2005. And that movie since 2005 has been all over the world. We sold out in London. We did Washington. We did Philadelphia. We did Montreal, Buenos Aires. We went to Bologna, Italy, and opened the Bologna Film Festival with it. It's been all over the world.
Wow.
And David Chin loved this movie. It's a very kind of obviously and not your typical movie of just somebody talking for an hour and a half, but it was me telling theater stories and life stories that were all true, that all happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like me being held hostage at gunpoint in a grocery store.
That one is mind-blowing. That one just left us both kind of spinning.
My date with the stripper, when I had to do a drug deal for my rock and roll group, and getting arrested by the police and how I got out of it. Being kidnapped by monks in Thailand and beaten with sticks. All sorts of different... The day I found out I was going to be a father. Yeah. All sorts of different stories. So David asked me, he said, what if we did Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party Part 2, but as a podcast that every week you would do either stories from your life or from show business?
Oh.
And so I write them and I record them and we add some music to it. And they're each about 30 minutes long. And we premiered it on iTunes. And now... consistently, we've been on the front page of iTunes. We were up to like number 16 on iTunes. We have thousands of people who subscribe. And I'm just like thrilled at the emails I get from all over the world of people who kind of love the different stories. Like this week, the podcast is about my experience in Heroes.
Oh, cool.
And it's at the Tobolowsky Files. And next week, it goes back to a story from my past, a personal story. And the week after that is Glee.
Oh, cool.
Well, that's very cool. Yes, and people can find it at the Tobolowsky File. Or is it Slash Film, or is there a website for it?
Yeah, you can, if you just go to the Tobolowsky Files at slashfilm.com, or you go to iTunes under podcasts, and it's right there. Just put in the Tobolowsky Files, and it'll come right up. It's all free, by the way. I should mention that this is not being done for money. It's just being done to kind of, that I have the time and to be creative, and I thought these stories would be a nice legacy for my kids eventually. And so we're not really doing it for money. It's free, but they're pretty enjoyable. And oh man, I love the one on Glee. But anyway, that's what that is. That's the Tobolowsky Files.
It really is one of a kind. I mean, I have to admit, it's very captivating, and it's very it kind of harkens back. You know, that they say the lost art of storytelling. I've heard a lot lately, and there is something very I guess it's like your autobiography in 30-minute increments.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I talk about falling in love for the first time, and other shows about getting your heart broken, and other shows about people trying to destroy you, and all of us in life have encountered these things. Plus, I do a show on Deadwood, and I do a show I'm doing commercials and
wow,
and different things. And so, you know, we try to please a lot of different people with it.
Your story of, I think it's episode 8 of working on The Night Visitor is something I've regaled with my friends with many times.
Yeah, the first half of it is working on sci-fi, and the second half is getting into an interesting, aggravating discussion with a man at a bar.
Yes.
Yeah, in which I had to try to prove the existence of God in 15 minutes. Five minutes.
Wow. And do you have any significant film or television projects that we should be looking for?
Well, I think there's nothing more significant than doing Glee.
Well, we agree with that.
I'm supposed to be doing a movie called The Last Ride in Arkansas at the same time as I'm shooting the Glee show. Mm-hmm. When you're a part of something that's as great as Glee, you want to just continue being a part of that. So I'm very happy right now auditioning for movies and doing movies in between various appearances of Sandy Ryerson.
That's all the questions I had. Jennifer, did you have anything for Steven?
No, I just wanted to say, though, but from your birthday party, I loved the story about the dolphin.
Oh, yeah.
I've giggled about that and talked with friends. It's fantastic.
And you know, it's like we were shooting that down at the ocean, of course, with no permits, with borrowed cameras.
Yep.
And the miracle that happens without rehearsal or preparation in that film, at the end of that I was telling that particular story, and Robert Brinkman, who was holding the camera, happened to see what was happening in the ocean behind me.
Yep.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, it was fantastic.
Really great. Ed, did you have any last questions for Steven?
I'm just really excited to hear that you'll be on the show. I wish I wasn't sick, because I'm sure I would have much more questions for you. But I feel kind of horrible. But thank you so much for coming on our show.
Oh, yes. It's such a pleasure. And you know, it's thrilling for me to talk to the people who love Glee. As thrilling it is for me to be working on a show that I think really is kind of part of the solution and not part of the problem. It kind of makes the world a little bit of a better place. I kind of like that.
You never really walk away from Glee without feeling a little bit better than when you started.
Absolutely.
Except for when you're like completely sad. But yeah. Besides then.
Some of them do end on a bit of a downer. That's correct.
But you're feeling something, and I think that's an amazing thing to come away with.
Well, I think, you know, if you take a look at the arc of this first season, so much of it is about telling the truth. That's basically what the show is the theme of the show, is the importance of being truthful. And even though they don't make it a huge issue in the show, that's almost what every episode is about. Mm-hmm. And the message hits home, I think.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Steven, for joining us for
my
for the
pleasure,
Glee Podcast.
Guys. It is a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you. We always end the same way. I've been Josh.
I'm Jen.
I've been Ed. Oh, I'm Glee Jazz Hand.
And we'll talk to everybody next time.
You make me feel real good. We can do it till we both wake up. Girl, you know I'm hooked on you. And this is what you're not gonna think that.